Diesel and Clooney here to ask the hard questions. Like, if a Rolling Stone jumped off a bridge, would you gather moss? I mean, you opened this can of worms. Now sleep in it. Don't think too hard. It's not rocket surgery. And now, the world's top-ranking rocket surgeons, frequently covered in moss, Chris O'Shaughnessy and Jerry Jones.
Part of that is true, I think. We'll let the listener decide which parts, but part of that.
That's true.
Part of that intro is true.
That intro is like two truths and a lie. Two truths and a lie
right there. It's so which... You know what they call those, Chris? That's a Malifor.
Is it, Jerry?
It is.
A Malifor, you say?
It is.
That sounds like some kind of...
Smart people know that.
It sounds like some kind of candy bar is what really I think.
Hey, wait. That was my joke.
Before we came on air, I introduced Jerry to the term Malifor.
I had never heard it before in my life. Yeah, Malifor. I love it, though. That's a great...
What a great term.
Yeah, great term.
And also, Jerry, I mean, I did. I took credit for your joke, but also a great name for a candy bar. I'm just saying.
It would be, yeah.
I think for this week's merch, what we need to do is launch our own line of candy bars, the Malifor.
The Malifor.
Around every wrapper would be a Malifor, which is, a Malifor is just, I realize we never explained it. Malifor is when you mix up two common sayings. So, you know, like, it's not rocket surgery. That's mixing two. Or I really do love the one, you opened this can of worms, now sleep in it. I love those. So we would. We'd have a candy bar called Malifor. And it would be, you know, on the wrapper would be two well-known sayings that don't fit together.
Malifors, yeah.
And we could continue it further, Jerry, because the flavors would be two things that don't go together either.
Two things that don't go together. Yeah.
Our flavors would be like brown gravy and caramel.
Raspberry and cinnamon.
Yeah. I might go for that. I'm not going to lie. I'd go for raspberry and cinnamon.
Yeah, that came out better than I intended it. I don't like cinnamon. Cinnamon. See, so anything with cinnamon really.
Anything with cinnamon. That's going to be your Malifor. Oh, it's good times, Jerry. Man, Malifors are funny. And you know what, Jerry? You know what?
There it is.
You know what else is funny, Jerry?
What else is funny?
Well, humor. Humor's funny.
Humor. Well, you know, like, I feel like we got to put a percentage to that because...
That's true. It's not a fair blanket statement.
Humor is intended to be funny.
There we go.
And sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. So let's unpack that.
Let's unpack humor, Jerry?
On a global scale.
Ooh, because if you're going to go 100 and global percent.
Malifor. Is that a Malifor?
It might be.
It was definitely a mix up of thought.
I think the problem is I do often say go 100 and crazy percent, but I've said it so much that sounds normal to me. Right. Yeah. I've normalized it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what humor is. Some of the best humor, I think, has to do a lot with normalizing. I think things become funny when you can point out when something has normalized. You know, it's observational humor. And I think that's absolutely, I love observational humor. When we point out things that we've normalized that are actually really, really funny. You'd think I'd have an example off the top of my head, but I don't.
But that resonates. It's like you normalize it and it connects. Everybody feels that experience. Everybody knows what you're talking about and it's their experience too. So it's funny, right? Like they hear you talk through your experience. You use humor quite a bit, right? Like you're a public speaker, you're a world traveler,
Jerry.
You're a well-known author. And I have to say, when I read your book, I believe I laughed out loud.
Oh, thank goodness.
Like by myself.
Oh, thank goodness.
I don't do that often, right?
I get a higher cut of royalties when people laugh out loud. The books have little sensors in them. Yeah. And if they detect laughter, cha-ching, I get bigger royalties.
Yeah, yeah. What have you learned then because you've traveled the world quite a bit. You've spoken in multiple countries.
I've been a place or two.
Humor is part of your disarmament, right? Like that's how you connect with a crowd, how you get to the point, how you really get to the heart of what you're going. I've seen you do that. What have you discovered about how your humor translates from region to region, country to country, culture to culture?
Oh man, it's such a good question, because humor, I think humor is universal in that we all do like to laugh,
right?
Yeah, I think that's the universal.
I haven't been everywhere, but I think everyone wants to laugh.
I mean, most places that I've been, people enjoy laughter. And I, to get really nerdy, Jerry, I even love the science behind all of it, because laughter is such a unique it's funny in and of itself, because it is it's a normalized thing. Like, you think about it, laughing out loud is one of the few sort of physical outbursts that we have deemed acceptable in a lot of situations. Not all situations. There are definitely places you should not laugh, but for the most part, it has a much higher tolerance level. You know, there's a lot of other bodily functions that we absolutely do not think you should be doing in public.
Yeah.
To quote a TV personality that just nailed it. Just this is I resonate with this on a deep level. He said, you know, the human body is a carnival of horrors, and I'm ashamed to have one myself. And I feel that deeply. There's a lot about the human body that is a carnival of horrors. And so a lot of outbursts, a lot of, you know, things the body does, we don't talk about. We absolutely, and they should kept behind closed doors. We're stinky, right? And it's terrible. And yet laughter is, it's a physical outburst, and it's one that we're actually really okay with. In fact, it's an infectious physical outburst. It's like a yawn. They're infectious too, but even more acceptable than a yawn.
I almost yawned when you said that. Like, I literally could feel it rising in my throat.
It is that suggestive. And humor, I think, is the same way. Laughter is infectious when it's genuine laughter. And I think we can detect, it's amazing how well our brain is wired. Not everyone is very intuitive on everything, but I would say most people have some really good innate intuition on genuine laughter. We can tell tell a genuine laugh, and we like it way better than a fake laugh. And it is, for that reason, it is really disarming. The science behind humor absolutely is that because it's infectious, because we're sensing for genuineness on a deep level there, humor is a great way to connect with an audience and then be able to delve into other things. I think that sort of marrying truth with humor, and things we need to learn with humor, is a really good idea. Humor is disarming, and we love to laugh. It burns things into our brain on a much deeper level. When you laugh about something, you have a much better chance of remembering it. And so even if it's just association, it's why I use funny stories a lot, because I want a funny story to drive home a point or a truth or a piece of learning. And if those two things can be connected, you'll end up recalling that piece of learning because it's attached to the humor, the funny bits, and the funny bits, they burn into our brain. We like the funny bits. So,
amazing to me that like the shortness of the gap between kind of the heart function of humor and the heart function of everything else. And like, what I mean by that is like, especially when speaking publicly, when speaking to a group of people, like if you can get them laughing, if there is a moment where everybody, it is disarming, and you can almost instantly jump from that to the PowerPoint, right? Not the PowerPoint presentation, but the powerful point, the powerful point that you're trying to connect, especially at an emotional level, at a deep heart kind of, hey, like, I'm going to present you with something. You're going to be faced with a decision that you need to make, or a life-changing, transformational piece of information. If you start with laughter, they can actually make that jump much quicker. And you just, it's like the crowd instantly shifts, right? It's just like, right? Like, there's that with moment. You. They are. They're with you. Like, I have... I've had the occasion to speak at a number of funerals, and believe it or not, like people think this is weird, but believe it or not, I think laughter is absolutely one of the things that makes funerals successful. There's a moment when you're remembering the life of someone you loved, and there was laughter in there, right? Like, there was joy, and people want to make connection with that. I got to speak at my father's funeral just 2 years ago. And kind of started with a joke. It was his joke. Here's a joke. Okay.
I'm ready.
Pete and Repeat sat on a fence. Pete fell off. Who's left?
Repeat.
Pete and Repeat sat on a fence. That's my dad's joke, right? Like that was one of my dad's favorite joke. And I led his funeral service with that joke. And it just kind of set the tone. Like we were able to recognize not just the loss, right? Like this is not all about the grief, but a part of that grief is recognizing what we lost, and what we lost was his sense of humor and the connection that he made when he told terrible, terrible dad jokes. Like he was, he was great at that. And we needed to remember that. And so it's like, there's not a disconnect between humor and laughter and some pretty deep heart stuff. There can be, I think, right? Yeah. Like, and that's the question is, and I think that's where someone who effectively uses humor knows the line between, I mean, it's really what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. Yeah. Right?
Well, it's such a good point, because I think that is where we move from, you know, humor being universal in some ways, and that, you know, we do all like to laugh, and humor is imprinted on brain. That's universal. But a lot about the application of humor is absolutely not universal. Right. It differs vastly culturally. It differs vastly even on personality type and things. You know, there's different things make different people laugh. And I think we've all experienced that moment where, whether it's with, you know, something, a funny story we've heard, or a funny something we've seen, or a something online, or a whatever, or joke, and we just think it's the greatest thing ever. And then you share it, and you're expecting everyone to laugh like you laugh, and they don't.
Right.
And you think, wait, was this not funny? But objectively, it doesn't really matter. If it was funny to you, it counts as funny. It's just that line is, it's so much less universal than we think.
Did you successfully cross that line? I heard a well-known comedian speaking about this once, and he's pretty off color and kind of goes that's part of his act is going down that route. And he was asked the question, you know, where is the line? Where's the line for what's appropriate, what's not appropriate? And I thought it was pretty insightful. Like his answer was, do the people laugh? Right? Like that's the line. If there is laughter, then the humor connected. When they stop laughing, you cross that line and you're no longer funny. Now we could debate, you know, the different levels of appropriate and inappropriate humor. But I felt like that was a pretty powerful statement, and works probably cross-culturally, right? Like when you're connecting with a cross-cultural audience, did they think it was funny? Right. Right.
Yeah.
Like did the humor connect? And if not, why not?
Well, in a rare moment for me, Jerry, in a rare moment, I want to debate that. I want to argue.
Oh, let's do. Yes,
I know it.
Are you initiating conflict?
No, it's happening. I'm initiating conflict, Jerry. Mark the day and time.
Yes.
Mark the day and time.
I feel like I should start talking in a British accent right now. I'm so excited.
Just to compete. It's true.
Yeah,
in fact, I will. Yeah. Do you know what, Jerry? I'm gonna lodge my debate with you in an English accent, just because then I'll feel a bit better about it. I'll feel less obtrusive if I do it in English. So here's my thought on that. I think there is some truth to it, that obviously, the line can be gauged as far as where people are laughing. However, I do think, and this is a pet peeve, and it, you know how strong a pet peeve it is if I'm willing to bring up an argument about it.
But one
of my very strong pet peeves, Jerry, is when people misuse, it's a misuse of humor. I think I've been in comedy shows and things where someone has launched into, you know, something, and they use comedy tone, but really what they're doing is just saying shocking, appalling things. And it's a weapon, because what they're doing is they're taking advantage of the audience's discomfort. And I think the thing is, when we get awkward enough, we will laugh. Mm-hmm. And what they're basically taking advantage of is if I say things so off color, so cross the line, so incredibly uncomfortable, that you as an audience, you're going to laugh out of discomfort. And as soon as someone in the audience laughs, other people are going to laugh, because the worst thing possible is to all sit there uncomfortable. the only thing worse than sitting uncomfortable is sitting uncomfortable next to someone else sitting uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And to sit in an entire audience of uncomfortable people is just misery. And we know that. So we will. We'll laugh just because we're like, oh, I don't like that I heard that. I hate that the person next to me heard it. And not only did they hear it, they know I heard it and I know they heard it. There are so many levels of awkward. I'm just going to laugh for protection as a distraction.
Yeah. And that's then, that's a great
And then
point.
the comedian eats it up and they're like, yeah, I'm connecting. Look at me. I'm funny.
I'm connecting.
And yeah. I do. I want to yell at them. I never would, but I want to yell at them and be like, you're not funny. You've just, you've sabotaged. You've basically manipulated us. You've forced a laugh out of us from discomfort, not because you're actually funny.
Yeah.
But even that I will say, Jerry, differs culturally. I think some cultures are far more okay with that. Some cultures have far less sort of social reservation about awkwardness. And so that line, I think that line probably rings a bit more true for them, but it's,
And I think that's at the heart of this is like, there's a really, the big question is knowing your audience, whether this is a cross-cultural audience or whatever you call it, domestic audience, if it's your people. Yeah. Right. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, I've seen kind of people push into that awkward, very much pushing the lines. And yet some of those people also find an audience who, and like their audience then becomes the type of people who think that is funny. Because once like there's a one time thing, like I just heard that, I was shocked. But then we've got YouTube and we've got Netflix and we've seen from a comedian perspective, right? Like just simply in that realm, we've seen this person. We knew what we were expecting when we came to the show. And then the people who find that funny gravitate then towards them, right?
Yeah.
So that plays out over the course of a career maybe. And then some people are just not funny. And other people try to mimic that appalling humor, right? Like, but they're just, they don't find that connection point and they're just terrible. They're hated.
Well, I think we've waded out of contentious waters. So I can do American broadcast voice again. I feel we've waded out of contentious. So I feel better.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that you went British when we were talking about off color, appalling humor. do you have anyone specific in mind there?
No, just that it really does make me, it makes me uncomfortable, but even more than that, I mean, I very genuinely, it makes me mad. And this is all just, oh, I'm going to have to apologize.
Get on your soapbox, man.
So sorry. Let me get on my soapbox. But it doesn't make me, because it's cheap humor. And I think maybe that's what I really react against is I'm like, listen, as someone who does rely on comedy for part of my livelihood, it is really hard work. And so I get really annoyed when people, you know, try to pass off just being appalling as comedy. Because I'm like, you're not actually funny. This is very lazy humor. You just thought of things that everyone feels uncomfortable hearing, and you're basically relying on a group survival instinct. That's very, very cheap. It didn't take much effort. So anyway,
it lessens all of that. Like, it makes it even worse that regardless, people are able to find an audience for that, right? Like, the cheapest, most disgusting, most horrible humor, you can still find an audience for that.
Absolutely.
And you can become quite popular, as is evidenced by a lot of comedy today.
Yeah. But I do think, I mean, it brings up a point. We've kind of touched on it here. And I think even people who go that route, I think even they find that one of the defining things about humor is that real comedy is hard. It's high risk, high return.
Very high risk.
And I think that's what we appreciate about it, that we've all built in these very, very relatively finely tuned sensors on genuine laughter. And I think that's what makes humor and laughter so precious, is that it is high risk, high return. That if you do it well, you know, so disarming. You can get an audience along with you. You can, so many good things come out of if you land it well. But if you don't, there's very little middle ground. There's either the audience loves it, they're on board, they're excited, they're hungry for more, or there's, oh dear, oh, he's not funny. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Right. And then you get sympathy laughs, or you get a disconnect, or there's very little middle ground. Like, I think it's either it goes great or it goes pretty badly.
Yeah.
And so it is, and that's one of the things I think that makes humor so attractive to us is it's like a little saga. Each joke, each time you get on stage and you choose to employ humor, you are setting out on a quest, mm-hmm. and it's a hard quest. You know, and I think, and doing it cross-culturally, there's so much to be said for knowing your audience. I think it is a really scary scenario to get up and try to use humor in an audience you know nothing about. Mm-hmm. I think it's worth the research. It's worth engaging with the culture a bit before you're going to use humor.
Yeah. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, like, this is a powerful, powerful tool for learning about a people. Right? Like a group, for learning about a culture, because I feel like we learn better in those moments where whatever we're trying to accomplish here doesn't work, right? Like
that's true.
We thought it was going to work. This is my framework says this is what works. And when that doesn't work, it's like all of a sudden my senses are heightened. I'm paying attention to everything. Why didn't that work? It makes me think of the time that we spent in China and learning very quickly that sarcasm doesn't work, right? Like that's just not a Chinese way of thinking. So when you speak sarcastically, they hear you, that goes through their filter. And again, this is a stereotype, right? Like there are some sarcastic Chinese people. There are all kinds of different humor there, but as a group, typically sarcasm doesn't play the same. And so when you say it, it goes through that filter, and what they hear is literal, and then there's just confusion, right? Like, and you say, you broke your foot. That's just great. It goes through that filter, and they're like, what kind of person are you that you think it's great
that
I broke my foot, right? Like that. And in those moments where you're misunderstood or there's some breakdown in communication, you actually not only learn about the other culture, but you learn about yourself, right?
Yeah.
When you start paying attention to the fact that sarcasm doesn't work, you begin to realize how sarcastic you are or how often use that as a means to connect with people. And it's just like the red flag goes up, the bells, the whistles, the lights all go off every time you're sarcastic, and it gives you a different insight on yourself and really kind of helps shape your own personality, which I think can be a really good thing.
Yeah. Oh, it's so true. There's so much wisdom to that, because humor does. It reveals so much about how you see the world, how the people you communicate with sees the world. And there's you can build phenomenal bridges through that. But sometimes you're right. Like, sometimes the best learning is realizing where you have not built a bridge, realizing where you've actually demolished a bridge. You know, your connection there, you think, oh, you broke your foot. Well, that's great. And then you realize, oh, no, they think I'm a terrible person. And then you're going to have to work hard to build another bridge. So you can use it, you can use it either way. I think a lot of humor, almost in the same vein, is either about over or under appreciating something or expressing something. You know, I think a lot of Western humor does this an awful lot, where we find it funny when we respond, again, either too much or too little. So it's like the meme, very, very famous meme, and with the dog in a room and there's flames everywhere. The dog says, "This is fine." Like, that's funny to us because his response is underwhelming. His response, you should not sit in a room on fire and go, "This is fine." He is underreacting. And so to us, that's really funny.
Right.
And the same thing too, we find overreaction absolutely hilarious. You know, it's really, really funny. The trope in so many sitcoms and things is for someone to come bursting in the room, be like, "Oh gosh, the world is ending." Mm-hmm. And then you find out that, you know, they got a parking ticket or something.
Right.
And that's the beginning of a whole storyline. And some of that, like you said, some of that, it doesn't translate near as well to cultures that are far more literal. And that's an interesting one. I think another really interesting one is higher and lower context. British humor is definitely, at least in the West, is seen as kind of its own thing. And I've learned this more and more. There are things that, growing up in Britain, things that I think are absolutely hilarious, that, you know, some Americans are like, is it though?
Is it?
And yeah. is it really funny? Or is that just, and it is, some of it is that Britain is usually relatively high context. A lot is unsaid. And so in Britain, you can employ humor where if you actually say something very directly, that can be really funny because it falls into a category of things that as Brits, we probably would never say directly. So when you do, you're like, oh, that's so funny. But for Americans who speak far more directly, they're like, was that funny? Because he just said what's going on. That's not funny. That's just, he just said what he was thinking. But to us, we're like, oh my goodness, did you hear that? He said what he was thinking. I mean, unfiltered, no qualifiers. He just said it. And and so we're like, oh, the humor. It's like, is it? You know,
I feel like you apply the American context to that and you just have to turn up the volume on that, right? Like we have to over direct, like, and that's where I think you get a lot of the like on up to the off color stuff, but it's just like you have to over exaggerate because that's what we do. Like we crank up the volume on everything, and now it's funny because I way over exaggerated, whereas your dials are set a little bit differently, and so you can just state it plainly, and that's where it hits as funny, right?
People are rolling. But I find it fascinating, you know, what registers as funny in different places. And I think I work with a group in Dubai called Knowledge Works, so little shout out to them because they do amazing stuff with intercultural understanding. And one model that they often look at is the major lens that we interpret reality through. And there are loads of ways to do this, but they've got three categories is one way to look at it. And one of those involves whether you look at life through a lens of innocence and guilt, which traditionally is more of a Western thing. You know, in the West, we want to be right. We don't want to be wrong. We like contracts because if you sign a contract and you keep to it, you're innocent. But if you violate it, you're guilty. That's bad.
You're guilty. It's as easy as that, right?
Easy as that. So innocence, guilt, and some cultures work more through that. Some cultures work more through power and fear. And the thing is, there's a mix of this in all of it. I wouldn't say that, you know, in the West, for example, it's not that there isn't some power fear dynamics. It's that the majority tend toward innocence, guilt. And then there's honor, shame. And and those, if you look at the world through those lenses and you want to be careful not to over stereotype, you know, it's fun to look at that as individuals because there is such a mix everywhere. You know, you can generalize certain parts of the world probably tend toward one, but as individuals, very complicated. So, but even that, you know, it's a great lens to look through for all kinds of things, for business, for lots of interaction. But weirdly, humor is fascinating to look through those lenses. Mm-hmm. That if you look at it, you know, I've been able to apply, not to like drag humor into so much of a scientific lens that it's not just fun anymore, but genuinely sometimes to translate and go, why is that funny to them? And you look at it and go, oh, because an honor shame, you know, the thing that would be just abominably terrible would be to be shamed. And so, you know, to construct a situation where they're playing on that, where they're applying shame, where there probably shouldn't be shame. It is, that's that over under that they're doing. And it's funny, you know, in that worldview, it might not translate to innocence, guilt. So we'd be like, but they didn't do anything wrong. So it's not actually funny. And so it is, even those lenses, those three ways to look at it, that influences what we find funny and what we don't. And I think, again, humor can be such a little translator, a little decoder ring to help understand, you know, people's priorities and things. I think there's so much to humor, Jerry.
There is so much to it. I think about...
it's funny how much there is to it, Jerry. It's funny.
I want to test this out because just with your cross-cultural experience, would you say that at some level, like concepts like self-deprecation have the potential to be funny anywhere?
Oh man, it's such a good question. And I wish it has to be done right. Enough.
Like that's one of those, that's another one of those areas like off color humor that people can take to a whole different level. And then it's just pathetic and you feel sorry for them. But I mean, at a level that connects, you know, cause a lot of times when we see someone self-deprecating, it connects with us. We've felt right. that way too, right? Like we've had that experience. I'm thinking about this was something I used in China, and I actually worked up to where I could have this entire conversation in China, just talking about when I got to China. I got in a taxi. I said, hello. He said, hello. I said, this is where I want to go. He said, well, your Chinese is so good. And I said, well, thank you. I've been working on my hello. And then we get where we're going. And he says, manzo, which means... It kind of means it's a farewell, kind of like a farewell greeting type thing that is said in Chinese. But then, so what I said is manzo, because I was just learning. You say ni hao, I say ni hao. You say manzo, I say manzo. And as soon as I say, when I said manzo, everybody laughs. Like they just die laughing, because manzo means, it literally means walk slowly, right? Like it means... it's for the person who's getting out of the car, not the person who's staying in the car. Right. But that like this kills, like I get such good laughs, and it kind of, it takes me back. It's the equivalent to, did you ever hear the old Brian Regan bit where it's like somebody says, hey, enjoy your movie. And he says, hey, you too.
You too.
That's a Chinese equivalent of what I was doing. And it kills. It's funny. Like there's this connection point of, oh, kind of funny foreigner trying to figure things out, does this.
Yeah.
And it somehow really, really connects, and it's a little bit self-deprecating, but it's a little bit connecting as well.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? Like the self-deprecation translate somehow across the board.
Man, it really is, Jerry. It's such a good question, because I'm hesitant. I'm very hesitant to apply anything universally. But I would say, in my experience, I think done right, and there's some caveats, like you got to adjust it for different cultures. Right. But I think in general that usually does work. And again, you've got to adjust it. But I think the reason it works is it's a way, self-deprecating, if done right, it's a way of pointing out something that's common without being accusatory. Like when you're self-deprecating, part of the reason we think it's funny is that we've all had moments where we've done dumb things. We all have.
Sure.
The problem is it's rare that you can get away with pointing that out. It becomes mean. Like if you just pick on members of the audience and be like,
you look like
an idiot, you blah, blah, blah. Whereas weirdly, you can get, I think self-deprecating, it's an invitation. It's saying, listen, I'm going to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Here are things that I've done that are ridiculous, and I can laugh about them. So it's also a little bit of a sign of maturity to be able to say, you know, here's where I've faltered, and I can be honest about it. That kind of invites, I think, from most audiences, I too have done similar things.
Yeah, it frees up that space, right? Like it's vulnerability.
Keeps it relatable.
It's also, it's vulnerability, but it's also incredible confidence, because what I'm saying is I'm going to show you kind of my mistake. I'm going to show you who I am or my flaws. But I'm doing that in such a setting that I'm actually inviting you to laugh at me and letting you know it's okay. Like you can have fun at my expense right now. In fact, I'm inviting you, because we've all also seen the people who kind of go down that trail of self-deprecating just from a self-deprecation standpoint, right?
Yeah.
Like they just, it's clearly, it's maybe vulnerable, but it is, it's not healthy.
Yeah.
But there's some,
you run a run to people's defense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's some level of confidence that has to come with that for me to be able to say, hey, I did this, I made this mistake, or this is what I did. I think it's funny. Don't you think it's funny too? And then you're right. It's an invitation. I'm passing that back to you and saying, it's okay if you do that too, right? Like you're disarming those protectionary methods that we use, those guardrails that we put up around ourselves that say, I don't want you to see my flaws. Oh, but you seem to be okay with it. And so maybe I will too. Yeah, that's pretty powerful.
Well, I do. And I like the concept. You said it really well. I like the concept of humor, maybe at its best, is when humor is inviting. That funny, when it's used, I think in its most powerful sense, is when it's invitational, when you're building connection. And inviting people in, and inviting people to to even, I think humor can be really reflective. I think, you know, some of the, if self-deprecating is done really well, it's also an invitation for people to re-examine themselves, that maybe they need to take themselves a little bit less seriously.
Right.
And there is, there's, man, there's a lot in that. It's a good way. It's a great way to learn humility and confidence. And, you know, how few things in life can teach you so directly those two concepts, that you both have to be humble and confident. Usually that is a really hard balance. You know, I think you get too confident and it's hard to be humble. You get too humble and it's hard to be confident. And maybe some of the magic of humor is that it demands both.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, the magic of humor. Nuggets, Jerry. Like nuggets.
Keep talking. We're going to smash those together and we're going to have our first Malifor rapper. Right. Those paradoxical. Goodness. Yeah.
Malifor sales are going to go through the roof.
Right. I'm inspired as even as you're talking, I'm inspired almost to the point of declaration that we here at Diesel and Clooney Unpack the World are going to quit taking things so seriously. I'm just not sure that's possible.
How do we get that balance?
I mean, when you set out to strategically design a podcast to be the lowest level of maintenance that a podcast could ever be, I'm not sure you could take it.
Which is funny, because to prove your point right there, the fact that you said when you strategically design a podcast, right. I was like, did we do that? Were we strategic? Because that sounds like a lot of work. That doesn't sound like us. We strategically designed it to be low maintenance by not even maintaining it enough to be strategic. Right.
Yes. It's brilliant. We are brilliant.
Brilliant.
We should write that book, but we probably won't, because that would take a while. Won't.
Yeah. Sounds like a lot of work. Like a lot of work. The power of comedy. It's really good stuff. I think it's one of those few things that I think we could almost always use a little more of in the world. And, you know, again, in appropriate ways. It's expensive, but I feel like it's worth it. It costs a little more, but I think I'm willing to pay for it.
And it's so worth the effort. When you find that level of connection with somebody that you have very few other levels of connection with, like I'm thinking cross-culturally, when you're trying to navigate the gaps between your culture and someone else's culture, and you're just like, you don't speak the same language, you don't see the world the same way, you've got a completely different paradigm for just about anything, but you find that moment where the two of you can laugh at something. Yeah, you don't even have to speak the same language, right? Yeah. Like, you don't have to say words. You can just have a moment where you laugh, and it is it's brilliantly connecting. Like, there's at a heart level, and it kind of opens the door for you to explore more about what you might discover.
It's so true. Again, it's the invitational sense in it. You can build bridges and connection. I am sincerely grateful for how many times I've been able to have just really good, like the kind of laughter that you should be embarrassed by the sounds coming out of your mouth, but you've just abandoned all hope and you're just going to laugh without restraint, because the amount of times I can think of that I've been able to share that with someone with whom I can't even speak their language or they mine. Mm-hmm. I love when that happens, and it's, that is such a beautiful connection moment. And it's such a bridge starter, because I feel like then I want so much more to communicate. You know, I want so much more the impetus to be like, oh man, that person is really, they're funny. They're funny. Mm-hmm. And we connect with humor. I want more. And so then I'm like, I will learn a little bit more of this language, because my gosh, do I want to keep, the funny going. It's, it's a beautiful motivator. It's a good motivator.
Mm. It is. And you, like you mentioned earlier, how infectious it is. Like, I think it's so true. And I think that crosses cultures, right? Like I don't know that it crosses all cultures. There may have to be a connection, like an anchor point of humor before all cultures would laugh. But once the laughter starts, it spreads. One of the most, I think this was brilliant. A photographer friend of mine, she's one of our favorite photographers, but she had my wife and her friends were getting together, having kind of a photo shoot of friends. And the photographer says, okay, now laugh. And they're like, are you going to tell us a joke or something? Like, what are we laughing at? She said, no, don't think about it. Just start laughing. And so one of them kind of, you know, almost sarcastically is like, and then like within seconds, all four of them were laughing their heads off because one found it funny. And then it became genuine, authentic, like right. gut, like the kind that your ears hurt, laughter. And it made for the best pictures like that. Those were some fabulous pictures. And I think that just says a lot about how much we revere laughter. Like we like it. We want to laugh. And once we start it, it's really hard to stop it. Have you ever been in that situation? Well, oh, I know goodness, you have, yes. but oh, where your laughter, it's not about the joke. It's about the laughter. The laughter right now is really, really inappropriate. You should not be laughing, but you are shaking on the inside. And yep. it's showing on the outside because you can't stop the laughter. Have you had that experience?
Oh, I have. And even, I mean, yes, like definitely in situations where I'm like, oh, I should not be laughing right now. You know, the mm-hmm. timing's not right or whatever. And then, yeah, it makes it, the more you try to contain it, the harder it is. But even occasions where it's okay to laugh, sometimes the closest I think I've been to death sometimes are mm-hmm. times where I've laughed so hard and can't stop. And usually it's with, you know, someone or other people who are laughing and you're fueling each other and their laughter sparks your laughter, which sparks their laughter and you escalate and escalate and escalate. And those are the times where I'm like, I may never stop laughing. This could be the end. I may right. actually exhaust my oxygen supply and die. And what a great way to go. But those near death laughter moments, those are anchor yeah. points in memory.
They absolutely, and anchor points in relationship. Like you think about the people yeah. that you've been in. Okay. Like here's a quick story. My wife and I were dating in college. Okay. She wasn't my wife yet. We were just dating. And this may have actually been before we were dating. But we got to class. We're sitting next to each other, front row of class. The teacher is standing right in front of us. Like he's inches away from our desks, like looking down on us. And she was humming a song. And because she had heard it on the radio. And so it was just stuck in her head. You know how that gets stuck in your head. So she starts humming. And I'm like, what are you humming? And she just kind of starts laughing. And I'm like, no, seriously, what are you humming? And so she writes it down. And the name of the song, this is going to date me a little bit. And I don't think we need to bleep this out, but it was Let's Talk About Sex. like that was the song she heard. It was in her head. She's humming. So she writes it down. So there is now a note on our desks that says, Let's Talk About Sex. These two kids who are
viewers who are just not yet to dating. That situation may misconstrue.
And so I had the note and the teacher standing right in front of us and I'm kind of playing with the note, kind of pushing it out there for the teacher to see. And and we started laughing like internally. And it was so like we did not want to explain this. We didn't want to have this conversation with the teacher. We didn't want him to say, hey, why don't you share with the class what you're talking about? It was just this moment where we started laughing and it was and here we are. Like it's been a good 5 years since then, or 25, depending on how old I am. and still that stands out as a moment where like it was a bonding moment, and it was we still talk about it.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. I think you're a good storyteller. You're such a good storyteller. It's part of the reason, you know, I think we can podcast well is we're both storytellers, and I have a hard time with quick jokes. Some people are really good with it. They're mm-hmm. joke people, and they mm-hmm. they've got right. jokes that are just quick. I'm not. I need to tell a story,
but I have a hard time. Yeah, telling. But I know two jokes. Like that's all that I have, and I have like spent intentional significant time memorizing those jokes just so I would have a joke. Right. But the problem with this is that all of those jokes are now memes. Like you can't have jokes anymore
yeah.
because they're all over the internet and everyone's heard your jokes.
Everyone's right? heard like, your jokes.
There are no new jokes.
Oh, it's true. Yeah. But you know what? That's what I want to close with that today, Jerry, because it's out of our comfort zone. And sometimes we've got to do it. So as storytellers, who normally rely on, I need to tell stories and it's situational. Mm-hmm. That's how I do humor. But I don't even have two. I only have one joke that came to mind, but I want to hear yours.
Let me go first. Cause I got,
okay,
two.
You go first.
You go in the middle and I'll,
yeah, we'll sandwich it. We'll sandwich.
Yeah.
It.
The other one we may have to bleep out. I don't know. No, it's not that bad.
Oh dear.
No, it's just,
what did I tell you about shock humor, Jerry? Have you not been listening? We just did a whole podcast on it. I used a British accent, so you're supposed to be able to remember it.
I was being sarcastic.
Oh, sorry. I didn't get that.
I forgot. That doesn't work with you.
It doesn't work with me. I'm very direct.
Yeah, no, like this, and this was all over the internet, so everybody knows this joke, and I feel crummy even telling it.
No, I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
It's like, what is what's the most significant? Wait, okay, pause. Sorry. What's the most significant elephant? Elephant. What's the most significant?
The fact that you can't tell a joke is so funny.
Let me tell you a story about when I told this joke. It might go better. What's the most significant element of comedy? Timing. Get it? Because you were like, that's one of my favorite jokes.
It hurts. It hurts, Jerry.
Yeah.
But I think I don't think mine's any better.
Good. Mine's, I would feel bad if it was.
Oh, it's, yeah. Jerry, it's worse. Here we go. Right, this is the only joke I could remember off the top of my head. Here we go.
Let's hear it. Okay.
Jerry, I only seem to get sick.
Wait, is this a joke or a segue?
I know. The problem
is. And you know, Jerry.
The problem is, it's not only my segue tone, it's also my joke tone. That's all I got. I have one tone for both. That's how rarely I tell jokes. I have to reuse an existing tone.
All right, let's hear
I'll try to change it. Jerry, you know, no, I can't do it. It's going to come out segue. You know, Jerry, I only seem to get. I can't do it. Okay. All right.
All right, just embrace it. Just roll with it.
Embrace it. Yep, here we go. You know, Jerry, I only get. Here I go. You know, Jerry, I only seem to get sick on weekdays. I must have a weekend immune system. You get it? Because weekend?
I do. I get it. I was so afraid as you neared the punchline that I wasn't going to get it. And then I was going to have to fake the laughter. And then it was like, it's going back to everything we talked about.
It's just that bad. I have a weekend immune system. Just that bad. All right, sandwich. Sandwich us out, Jerry.
Reminds me, Chris.
Yep.
What's the difference between roast beef and pea soup?
I don't know, Jerry. What's the difference?
Anyone can roast beef.
Comedic gold, Jerry. Comedic gold.
Yeah. No, it's a meme. Everyone's already seen it. I don't know how comedians do it in this day and age, because what joke hasn't been told?
Oh, seriously. I don't envy them. I really don't. It's a hard job. It's a hard job nowadays. Oh, man. Oh, that was good, Jay.
Good. I'm thinking back on everything we have just said, because my wife just sent me a text that said, the kids can hear you, for your information.
It's a good sign. If you're laughing loud enough to be heard, it's a good sign.
Yeah,
you know.
That's good.
Oh, well, I think Jerry,
we successfully unpacked that.
Humor feels unpacked. Humor feels unpacked. Merchandise has been designed. Yeah, I like to think we've left the world a better place than we found it, or at least, hopefully, the world of both of our listeners
doesn't even matter. Yeah,
it doesn't even matter.
We had fun.
I keep referencing our two listeners. It might just be you and I, Jerry.
Well, that's two. That's two.
And you know what? I feel better. I feel better for this podcast.
I do too.
Mission accomplished. Oh, Jerry, it's been good times. Let's do it again soon.
Let's do.
Thanks, dear listeners. Even if by that I mean thanks us.